did Michael buy cowboy boots because he's moving to Colorado?
He sure did. He sure did. And he's getting, like, you know, used to the altitude up on top of the roof. I like to call this a high altitude open.
High altitude open. He's not only on the roof, Tiff, he's on the air conditioning unit on top of the roof, as high as he can go.
You have no idea how high he can fly.
That's true. Also, he may jump onto a bouncy castle.
Well, there's no bouncy castle in sight, but what is in sight is Dwight delivering a plate full of Rocky Mountain oysters.
Oh, those do not taste like oysters.
That's because they're not oysters. They're bull testicles. I cut them off fresh this morning.
I mean, you probably eat these, right?
I don't
farm
live
boy?
Near the Rocky Mountains.
Oh, you don't?
Do you know where the mountains are?
Do I know where your state is? No.
No.
No,
also,
I don't.
Also, I did some reading. Rocky Mountain oysters, they're served mostly in Canada, it seems like, but also maybe in parts of Texas. I don't know.
Texas doesn't have Rocky Mountains.
That's true. Well, they're called different things because what they really are bull testicles. Fresh. Mind you, Dwight cut them off this morning.
That's right. I mean, if you're going to have them, you might as well have them fresh.
He has a plate of them. How many bulls does he have?
He shouldn't have that many bulls. No. I'm pretty sure he's a goat guy anyway, but he has a lot of goats.
And beets.
And one dead horse.
But he's working on a machine to extract burgers out of the horse.
Anyway, we're getting off the tangent because I think we don't really want to talk about this episode, but we have to. And the episode we are talking about today is Goodbye, Michael, Season 7, Episode 22, originally airing on April 28th, 2011, written by Greg Daniels. He's back to close out the Michael era of this show. Oh my gosh. I have like notes basically in this episode about like where I started crying and how much. It's a really rough one to get through. And I think it's mostly in part because Steve Carell himself seems really emotional throughout this entire episode. And the character of Michael Scott, like everyone is just really feeling it. And overall, I really love the way that they've structured this episode because the whole idea of it is that Michael is leaving and everyone knows, but everyone thinks Michael is leaving the next day and Michael is leaving this day. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a really unique way of saying goodbye to a character in that like one character knows that this is the end and everyone else doesn't. And it really makes for like a super emotional dynamic. And it's such a well-written episode. It's a great episode, but it is really hard to watch multiple times because it doesn't have the feel goods that most Office episodes have.
You know, one thing we spoke about last time, I think, or in the previous episodes, right, is this chasm between Michael and Dwight. And even in the cold open, we have Michael trying to make that right. And so Dwight finds Michael, hands him this plate. Michael doesn't like them, obviously. And, you know, it comes out that Dwight's still really mad. He's really mad about this job thing.
What is wrong with you? I'm the sick freak.
Yeah.
After what you did, you expect to be buttled after
Listen,
you didn't recommend me?
Dwight, I don't own Dunder Mifflin, okay? The job was not mine to give.
That doesn't really sink in with Dwight, but then Michael does this really smart thing, and I can't help but think that this is one of those things that if it wasn't tall and beets written on the back of Dwight's card, you know, maybe Bears is on there too, because Michael asks Dwight for advice on how to stay safe from bears in the Rocky Mountains in Colorado, but he does it while, like, he gives the camera a look that he knows what he's doing, right? He knows that he is trying to play into, you know, what Dwight knows about. I don't know. It's pretty cool.
Look, I need your advice on something. I am told that there are bears in the Rockies.
Where did you hear that? Obvious XM radio?
Well, I was just thinking that maybe I should keep a salami in my pocket.
Great idea.
In order to feed the bears.
Especially if you think that life would be better without legs.
How do you mean?
Black bears can smell a salami at 5 miles, Michael. What are you thinking? And they run faster than a horse. So if you were thinking about outrunning them on a horse, I would try a cheetah. You in tight pants, Michael? are a salami to a black bear. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he really gives Dwight a confidence boost without Dwight really knowing it, because he's feigning stupidity about these bears, where he's going. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a Michael here that really knows better now. We're seeing a Michael here that has awareness of everything and everyone, and he's not here to cause problems or to make it about himself today. It's about everyone else. And this is, I think, the perfect way to kind of start that off. And that little nod, that little look at the camera is really telling us that Michael's in control of the narrative today, and he's going to let everyone kind of have the win. And I really love this setup, and I love this for the characters and the actors.
Yeah, I do too, because you don't want to leave this like central character with any bad blood anywhere. Right, yeah. You want this to go well, and we see that as he interacts with different people in the office. He's righting wrongs is too strongly said, but he is making sure that he's good with everybody, including some things way back in the past, as we'll get into. There's a lot of references to previous episodes, a lot of references to season two, which I think a lot of people kind of view as their favorite season, certainly mine. And it's just, it's really well done, and there's really only one thing I would change in this episode. I would have just like cut the entire Gabe Andy thing, because
me too.
I don't think we need to see that. So maybe we can just get that out of the way now and pretend it's not in this otherwise perfect episode. So in Michael's Last Dundies, Aaron gets on stage, breaks up with Gabe. Gabe doesn't take it very well. And we see in this episode how poorly he's actually taking it. He follows Andy into the men's room. He doesn't like shove him against the wall, but he kind of traps him against the wall.
Stay away from Aaron.
Hey, I'm your boss.
Why don't you stay away from me?
I'm going to stand where I want, okay? You don't want to get on my bad side. I've seen some horrible things. I own over 200 horror movies.
Okay, that's so weird. Just go away.
No, you go away.
I was like, is he threatening Andy with like extreme torture? I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
I think the good thing to come about that little scene, even though I'm not keen on it happening in this episode, just like you, I do think it's nice that we get a filming crew reference from Jim.
You guys are filming people when they go to the bathroom now?
Because we haven't had many of those, and I like when they show up.
Any time throughout this episode where Gabe sees Andy or Andy walks by or something like that, you know, Gabe is muttering under his breath. He's complaining. He complains to Michael later on. He's not handling this like an adult.
No. And I don't really think it has much place in this episode. I would have loved to see this episode begin like a few scenes later, where we have Michael in the confessional in his office talking to the film crew, showing off his mug, you know, that he states that he bought this for himself. And then he shows off the Dundee that he got the night before.
I bought this for myself. And yesterday, they gave me this.
And he mimics the opening scene of the placing of the Dundee on the desk. That's a really nice reference. Yeah. I love that they put that in, because if you think about the documentary airing, that them recreating that scene, that is so wonderful to have that and be like, oh, after the documentary aired and they put the intro out, right? Like these things happening, that was the moment that they're kind of inferring that they caught. And I think that's really special. And even though we know Michael's going to be leaving his desk, him placing that Dundee, that Best Boss Dundee on there, is just so wonderfully symbolic. And we get to think of that back from the entire open. So like we've seen that, you know, for now over 120 something episodes. I forgot what episode this actually is, maybe in the 140s. So like we know that scene so well because we've watched it every single time we've turned on an episode of the show. And I think that that's really fantastic that they put this in as Michael's last day.
It's my favorite shot in this episode, and it's one of my favorite shots in the entire series, just because it is such a tip of the hat to Michael Scott and to Steve Carell, I think, too. It's really nice.
So overall, this episode does kind of start out with Michael being kind of suspiciously pragmatic about things, especially the party planning committee, which is meeting in the conference room. There's a whole scene where they are all back together as a group that they all wanted to plan Michael's going away party, which again is a nice nod to how everyone has changed and come around to Michael being the boss, where I think before there would have been like, do we have to do this? And now everyone's anxious to be on the committee to plan the party.
It's the dream team.
There they are. Party planning committee together again.
Well, we all wanted to plan your goodbye party. We thought this would be easier. We thought.
It is Pam and Angela and Phyllis. They've all led the party planning committee at different points in time. But it's also Meredith. So it's the dream team plus Meredith.
Oh, she makes it even more of a dream. She brings such a spicy element to the party planning. She really wants to push for an erotic cake, which everyone else is obviously a little like, do we really? Really, that's the good idea?
You know, Phyllis buys a lot of them. She has a lot of experience.
I very much believe that from what we've learned of Phyllis over the years.
As a person who buys a lot of erotic cakes, it just feels good to be represented on one.
Fire of erotic cakes.
Uh-huh.
But one of the things that we've seen throughout the years is that Michael usually has such a strong, strong opinion about what happens at a party, especially a party that's meant for him, and also opinions about parties that aren't even meant for him. Mm-hmm. And this time he is floating in just saying, you know, whatever everyone else wants.
You know what? I'm thinking maybe we should get ice cream that everybody will like. How about vanilla? Let's get vanilla.
And this catches everyone off guard. But again, like, it can be attributed, I guess, the way that they're thinking about it is that this is the more mature Michael. You know, this is a Michael that is making a decision to leave the company that he thought he would basically die in. You know, it's just a different, more mature Michael. But we know better in that his pragmatism here really is meaning that he's not going to be there for the party that he is seeing everyone plan for him.
Yeah, I think Pam picks up on this the most, but
more than Jim.
Well, Jim like unravels the whole plot, right? Mm-hmm. He sees all these things because, as we find out later, Pam just plays hooky during the day to day. But I do like this. I do like this idea that Michael is going to, you know, he's going to leave. Really, the day before anyone knows, it's going to be a bit of a surprise to people. But he's setting up a party that everyone will enjoy. And it's like a gift to them. And I think that's really nice. You know, he says no drama. And for once, they'll have a party with no drama because there'll be no Michael Scott.
I don't even think if he were to show up, it would have been, you know, he would have had the drama. But so overall, before we get into, like, I think we should go through, you know, the gifts that were given and kind of like where that leads us in the story of this episode. But do you think that it was a good idea for him to not show up to his final party? Like, is that something that you would do? I don't, because I was thinking about it and I could argue either way.
I've only ever had one going away party in my entire life. And it was when I left the Salvation Army. I'd worked there for a long time and I honestly was surprised by it. Like, I was just working something. Someone was like, oh, hey, can you come look at something over here in this other room? There was a cake and stuff. So I don't know. Like, I've never known about one in advance. I would say that it seems very un-Michael thing to do, except for the fact about the things we've talked about is that Holly is his family now. And he doesn't need the going away party the way that maybe he would have had needed it under different circumstances, if that makes sense. For Michael, it's much more about where he's going as opposed to what he's leaving. And so I think this version of Michael, this late stage Michael that we're seeing, I think it's totally fine for him to pull this off.
The way I was looking at it was like, I feel like he is just, especially coming off of the Dundies that he just had. And we saw that last scene in the previous episode where he was like, this is going to hurt like a mother, right? Like, he was already tearing up. I think him making this decision to not tell everybody like what his actual last day is he's kind of like, trying to save his own heartbreak a little bit by taking control of the situation and being able to say goodbye where, like, he's not getting the emotion back from everyone else. Like, he has it on his side. And he is able to say his goodbyes without, because I, you know, like when sometimes when someone else starts crying, then you like cry more or like, you know, you feed off of each other's emotions. I think that he's like saving that heartache. Like he's putting that aside. And I don't know, but I think that that might be a little bit like, again, a testament to his maturity here where he is. He might be in the situation. It's like a parent protecting a child a little bit. And he's like, I'm going to burden all of the emotion here. And I'm going to get to say the goodbyes and have the moments with the people that I've wanted to have. But it's not going to be like this overblown, like giant emotional, like sad party of, yeah, of him thing. Saying goodbye. Yeah. Like it's going to feel anticlimactic to everyone else. But at the same time, is that, you know, a little bit less heartbreak for everyone else too.
Yeah. I mean, all in all, I like the decision. And I think all these reasons are a good reasons to consider why he would do something like this. And I do like that Jim's the one who catches on, which we'll get to. I don't know. I love so much about the way this is put together. But there's a scene in the break room that we should talk about. And everyone's having lunch.
Hey, it's almost your last day. Come on, sit with us.
No, I'm almost done.
You sure?
But he overhears and watches this conversation unfold that Pam's got to go out of town to go get a new shredder. Kevin is really adamant that it should shred magazines. And so Jim's like, Kevin, did you break the old shredder by trying to shred magazines out of it? This is a funny little conversation. It really kind of upsets Michael. And he ends up after this and after Oscar asks him where he should forward his last check. And it's clear that Michael doesn't know what city he's moving to. You know, he's upset and he's beginning to question this, and he calls Holly, and as soon as they start speaking, he calms down, right? And then they do their voices thing because that's what they do.
I gotta call her,
and I'm going to tell her that I cannot come.
Hello there.
Hi. What is the name of our town?
Boulder. Is something wrong? Are you okay?
No, no. I just needed to hear your voice.
Oh, you mean this?
Yes, my hero.
I'll pay the rent. Okay, my mom's looking at me like she has no sense of humor. It's a joke.
Oh, I miss you.
It's just really nice that he's worried. He's kind of worked up. He's reminded of the reason he's doing it, and then he's okay again. It's perfect.
Yeah, I think that that's really important that we do have that appearance of Holly, well, the voice of Holly, and we know now that she is already in Colorado with her parents. And I think that that is a really important moment that we see as the audience that Michael is going towards something that he values more. I think that if they left that scene out, if we didn't get that moment where he reconnects with Holly and we see that he's better off with her than staying in the office where we want him to stay selfishly, that we are able to like let this episode play out as it does, because we realize like, okay, Michael is having a hard time. It seems like it's the wrong decision. And then we see that, no, Holly is the right decision, and that is where he should be, you know, pointed towards his future.
Should we get into some of the gifts that he's giving?
Yes, absolutely. We should. Let's do like Phyllis, Stanley, Andy.
She said.
No, she didn't say that. I want to start with Phyllis because he starts with Phyllis. I think that she's the first one. Not on the list. He has a whole list of people, and they are all over the place. He's not going in list order. He's just like seeing who he can get when he can. But Phyllis ends up being the first person that he has his little interaction with. And he starts by complimenting her. She thinks he's going to be telling a scandalous story about her past. But really, he says a compliment. And this is the first time that we get a little indication that Phyllis had a child that she had given up years ago, possibly in high school.
It's more than an indication. She tells the camera, I thought he knew about that.
I thought he knew about the baby I gave away.
Right, right. So yeah, exactly. It's even more than that. I was being coy. And we also see a callback to a handmade gift that Phyllis had tried to give Michael previously. I believe it was an oven mitt from like the first Secret Santa Christmas episode. Mm-hmm. And today she's knitting him some mittens for his trip to Colorado, which is super appropriate because it's going to be cold. And he treats this gift with the respect that I think that, you know, any good person or good friend would treat a handmade gift. And we can directly compare and contrast that to how he reacted to the oven mitt. And we can see, again, Michael's growth here in that he is thrilled about the mittens. He is encouraging her to finish them as fast as she can, which adds a lot of stress to the situation. But it's stress that, like, Michael knows he's leaving at 4. Phyllis doesn't. Right. And it's just really nice to see Phyllis and Michael kind of fix that thing that happened before. And mm-hmm. we're seeing them, like, now the exchange of this gift going the way it should have gone in the first place.
Look, Michael, it's a going away present, so your hands won't get cold.
Ah,
it's almost done, but you can't get them wet and they can't be dry cleaned either. You have to hand wash without water, wring dry gently, and use a hair dryer on cool.
Sounds great. I just think it's great.
He also gives her a pair of teeth from his desk. He's handing out all of his toys.
Phyllis, you are shy and sweet, and you don't often speak your mind, but you should, because you have great ideas. So, Phyllis, I am giving you this so you can always remember to speak your mind.
Oh, gee, thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
Stanley's gift is not as meaningful. Stanley is given Michael's tiny pool table, but with no balls or sticks. So I'm sure Stanley will treasure that forever.
Stanley, I love your Sudoku and your puzzles. I bestow upon you my felt. May you never lose the fun-loving quality in life.
Where's the rest of it? It's got no balls.
Well, okay.
What he really should have done was given him a pretzel, but, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he paid that close of attention.
I don't know. They were in line at pretzel day together, you know.
That's true.
Andy gets a huge gift. Andy is handed this kind of rubber band bound stack of manila envelopes.
Andy, who needs confidence that he is a great salesman, I give you my clients, our 10 most important accounts.
Wow.
Excuse me, wow.
You know I'm the worst salesman here, right?
But you're the best salesman on the inside.
What does that even mean?
You sold us all on Andy, a product that nobody wanted.
No one, including Andy, thinks that this is a good idea, right? The sales staff is like, whoa, he's the worst salesperson here. Andy says, hey, I'm the worst salesperson here.
I'm going to lose him.
You're not going to lose him.
I promise you that I will.
Just do your best. I have faith in you.
This sort of sets off another minor plot thread where Andy starts going through these clients, and it doesn't go super well at first.
I understand why Michael did this, but I also don't understand why Michael did this.
Mm-hmm.
It's everyone in the office definitely reacts, I think, how we all, the audience, would react. And yeah, it's like, why? Why are you letting this happen? And, you know, Andy says, I'm going to lose him. And throughout the beginning of this, we do hear Andy even saying, like, oh, that one's gone. It's gone. And Michael trying to be the good parent here and saying, like, it's okay, buddy. Like, just keep trying.
Michael, I just lost Porter Hardware. Oh. I lost him.
Okay. You know what? Just do your best, buddy.
It's kind of painful to watch. I don't like watching Andy lose all these clients, but it does kind of get him and D'Angelo out of the office for this episode. I think that that's kind of the reason for this. But we have a plot line, like a little B plot here, where we see Andy maybe coming into his own a little bit. Maybe Michael's decision wasn't so bad after all, because through all of the cringy turmoil of him losing a few first and then him and then Andy and D'Angelo going out on a sales call, we do see Andy kind of succeed a little bit here. And I think that that's a giant boost to Andy's confidence. Oh my God, those pants are so pink. I just gotta say that right out loud. Like, you are wearing the pinkest pants to this sales call. Like, it is, they're so pink. Not that pink is bad. They're just so, so bright.
it just looks like they're
two different outfits he's wearing. It's this maximum Andy ridiculous outfit for him to be going out and trying to keep these clients.
Yeah, so he goes to D'Angelo. He's like, look, I need you to go with me to the sales call. He interrupts D'Angelo, by the way, who is coping with things, maybe not as well as he should be. We've learned that he's beat obesity. He's into portion control. When Andy comes in, he's making a s'more on the burner of the coffee maker with like stuff he bought out of the vending machine.
It's so much worse than a s'more. It's like the chocolate, like Hershey's chocolate melted on top of a Rice Krispie treat. It's real bad.
Oh, I didn't catch the Rice Krispie treat. Okay, oh, yeah, that's terrible. And so they go, but D'Angelo's like, hey, we need to make a stop on the way. Is there an animal shelter near here? And Andy pulls into one. And we learn that D'Angelo was initially hired by Joe Bennett before this. You know, he's apparently climbed up the ladder at Sabre because he was walking down the street, unemployed and sad. And he spotted this man stealing this dog from a woman. And that woman ended up being Joe Bennett. D'Angelo intervened and got the dog back and gave it to Joe, and Joe hired him on the spot. And so D'Angelo wants to go into an animal shelter, have Andy hold a dog, and D'Angelo recreates this event over and over, but each time with way, way more energy and cursing and rage. Like, D'Angelo's... That's not a normal human thing to do, I don't think.
Give me that dog! It's not your dog! Yeah. Again.
Oh. Okay.
Give me that damn dog, you thief! It's her dog!
Okay.
Don't ever do it again! You hear me? You feel that energy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Woo! Yeah! Okay, again.
No, I mean, and D'Angelo even says that, like, he really was on his, he was, like, at the bottom of the barrel of his life at that moment. And so we're seeing that D'Angelo had this event happen to him. This is how he got hired. And overall, he might not be the most stable person. I think that this is the seeds of doubt that we are continuing to plant about D'Angelo. We're seeing him really in a terrible light. I mean, we've seen Dwight do some really weird things to psych himself up for a sales call, mm-hmm. but nothing compares to this one. I think that this is just an absolute outlier. And then in the meeting, as we follow Andy and D'Angelo, he is an awful salesperson. His sales pitch is so bad and such a turnoff. Even Andy, who we've also seen do terrible, terrible sales pitches before and just put foot in the mouth over after foot in the mouth.
Yeah.
D'Angelo is worse. And even Andy is recognizing this. He's like, Andy can see that he could have saved this. And mm-hmm. D'Angelo tanked it so bad. And that is what encourages Andy to kind of double back into the office again behind D'Angelo's back and re-pitch to the client.
I'd just like to apologize for that. I could tell you that he has a steel plate in his head or that he's crazy, but the truth is, I think he's just a terrible salesman. And I want you to know that if you re-up with us, anything you need, day or night, I will be the one to take your call.
Keep talking.
That's not a great thing to say, you know, about your boss and supervisor here. And so I like that we have this bit in the episode because we're seeing that, like, Michael isn't so easily replaced, and he's not so easily replaced by D'Angelo, and that we are setting up like a little bit of a some turmoil to be going down in the new management. And so I think that that part of the plot, even though I wish that we were just solely focused on Michael leaving, I do like that this is here, because we're not hiding the fact that we don't like D'Angelo, but now it's being pitted that way for the show.
Yeah, I like that Andy gets the win, and I like that he doesn't necessarily take credit for the win, because when he comes out of the office, the client apparently called D'Angelo and said, hey, you know, we're in. And D'Angelo's like, hey, guy, we did it. And Andy just sort of lets it go.
Yeah, I think that that's the right move here when you are, you know, when we are dealing with someone like D'Angelo. And I think that Andy really reads the room quite well. And yeah, so we'll have to see where that's going. But I think that Michael's gift ended up being a success, because we see Andy having a bit of a boost of confidence when it came to a pretty big client that he was able to keep all on his own.
So let's get back to the gifts. And the sort of the goodbyes.
Yeah, let's head to accounting. We have Kevin, Oscar, Angela.
So Michael unwraps this character drawing of Kevin. He's a pig. He's eating pizza.
Don't be a caricature, Kevin. Never be a caricature. How did that feel when I tore that up?
Better.
Good.
And then he does this weird thing of like some sort of like, I don't know, like Instagram guru, like, you will lose weight. You will find love. And he's like, I'm fine the way that I am. He's like, but you shouldn't be. You know, like, okay. Like, it's kind of insulting.
It's very insulting. Michael is trying to give Kevin the gift of confidence, but going about it in quite a Michael fashion. So, you know, we can't have the character change so much that we don't believe it. And I think that this moment here with Kevin is one of those things. It's like, oh yeah, you know, Michael is still Michael. And every once in a while, he's going to have one of those cringy or not PC. He's not going to change his colors so quickly, but he is kind of trying here. And so I think that that's why it really works. I love that every single gift or goodbye that he has with each person isn't like a different character. It's not like Steve Carell saying goodbye. It's still Michael saying goodbye.
Yeah. And I think in accounting, we see that maybe more than the other places.
Oscar's is incredibly unique. Oscar's gift.
I love Oscar's.
I love where it goes. Like, all right. So Oscar is gifted from Michael this like burlap doll that appears to be handmade. And Michael gives it to Oscar, and he says like he's one of the smartest people that he knows, and he gives him this gift. And then we get this talking head of Michael, a little confessional with the camera, and Michael is uncontrollably laughing that Oscar just accepted this really crappy, weird, random gift that he says it looks like a bunch of, I think it was blind monkeys had made.
And I think of you as my scarecrow because you gave me a brain. So that's why I made you this.
Thank you, Michael. It's beautiful.
It looks like it was made by a 2-year-old monkey on a farm. And he just accepted that I put all this work into it. He has the lowest opinion of me of anybody. Oh,
he's just laughing his head off about it. And I think that it's so very funny. And one of the lines that he throws out is, he has the lowest opinion of me. And I think that this is Michael's way of turning things around. But I also think it's really interesting how Michael here is able to have that perspective of seeing the way that Oscar sees him and kind of able to laugh at it and make this ridiculous joke that only he knows is a joke. And I think it's really funny.
It is really funny. Nothing is terrifying.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Is it? I don't want to see that. I don't want to see that thing ever again.
Actually, that would be a really good gift to an Office fan if you made that and like, you know, give it to somebody. He just accepted it.
he then goes around to Angela. He's like, hey, isn't it weird we didn't hook up? She's like, no, that wasn't gonna happen. There's a state senator joke, always good.
I am engaged happily, and you have landed yourself a senator.
State senator.
Mm-hmm. Bravo.
Bravo.
And then she shows Michael some photos of her and the state senator. Michael sort of begrudgingly agrees.
I think the gift is that he is going to happily look at the photos for a little while with Angela, you know?
Like, yeah, yeah, begrudgingly is the right word. He looks at them, but then he kind of looks at the camera like, oh, geez. And it's Robert, the state senator, and Thomas, who's Robert's aide, and then Angela. And they're skating and they're doing different things, but it is very clear that it is Robert and Thomas doing the things together, and Angela is the third wheel. And Oscar's, of course, seeing it all and making little comments. But yeah, continue to lay that groundwork that there's something up with the state senator.
I like that they don't let this episode pass by without adding little things that are going to continue moving us forward. And I think that if they just focus so much on Michael leaving and the ending of things, like him like closing things out with each person, and they didn't give us those little trails of there will be more after this, I think that that would feel, it would make this episode feel a lot different. But we are left with a feeling that, you know, there's going to be more episodes and we're going to continue on with these people and we're still going to be interested in everyone else because there are these little threads that are left open. I mean, maybe that's an argument for the whole Gabe thing to be okay being there. I mean, it really wasn't very much. It was just a tiny bit. So it's a way of like keeping that door open that these people are going to be continuing. There's going to be a conflict between Gabe and Andy. There's going to be stuff going on with Angela and her, you know, gay boyfriend and Oscar knowing about it. There's going to be a continuation of D'Angelo. So there are these threads that are still out there that we're not completely closing off.
Yeah. The difference is I kind of like the state senator jokes, but mostly that state senator is not a real job. Obviously it's horrific for the Angela character, but I just don't like Gabe. So I just do without Gabe. I really don't like Gabe. So that's accounting, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Next we kind of go to the annex and we have Toby's gift, which is Michael just like not making fun of him. Like, yeah, just not saying anything mean. You know, he sat down, he listened to like maybe a whole paragraph of Toby speaking. And then he gave up. He was like, I just can't. He just walked away without saying anything too mean to Toby.
But Toby has a suggestion, though.
He does.
Because Toby's brother, Rory, lives in Boulder, where Michael is moving. He says, hey, why don't you look him up? And then later, there's like a video call between Toby and Rory. Rory is super boring, just like Toby. He's like, I got a lot of jams. Does he like jams? And Toby's like, no, he doesn't like jams.
Here's the thing, Rory. I think you guys would hit it off in an odd way.
I could bring him a welcome basket. I'll surprise him.
Oh, okay. Well, you should give him a little time to settle in, but...
Does he like jams? My shelves are overflowing with preserves.
My guess is that Michael doesn't follow up with Rory, is my assumption.
I hope not, for Rory's sake, really.
Yeah, seriously.
Fun behind-the-scenes info about that phone call. That actually is the actor who plays Toby's brother, right?
Yes.
Brother? It's his, yes, brother. And also, back around, Toby's brother, the actor or the person that's playing Toby's brother, in real life was married to Angela. Mm-hmm. And when Angela was pregnant, that was their baby. So that was like back in the pregnancy that they were hiding, not the pregnancy that Angela has later, spoilers, but the pregnancy that she was hiding in previous, mm-hmm, seasons, that was with Toby's brother, Rory Flenderson.
Kelly's gift is fantastic. She's on her phone. Michael's trying to talk to her and she's like, you know, just leave me alone. Leave me alone. And Michael's like, if I left you alone right now, if I just disappeared, would that be the best gift I could give you? And she says, oh my God, yes! And then he just walks away.
Kelly.
What?
If I just went away right now, would that be the best gift that I could give you?
Yes, please. Please go away. And stop using that weird slow voice.
I think kind of included in the annex, but not officially on the way to the annex, I guess. We also have Ryan.
He's in between the bathrooms is where Ryan is.
Yeah. So on his way out of the annex, you know, he stops by Ryan's office closet and he gifts Ryan his St. Pauli girl sign in the tiny office. All of that neon. Man, Ryan's workspace is popping.
She was once my girl, and she is your girl now.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is totally unnecessary.
You're not prone to seizures.
No.
It reminds me of the Seinfeld episode where there's like the chicken light across the street, and it
yes,
turns
and Kramer.
Kramer's apartment into bright red.
Exactly. Exactly. So Ryan graciously accepts this gift and thanks Michael. And then we have Daryl. And here we have a little great reference to the name of our podcast. Somehow I managed. Oh, Daryl is left the only copy of Somehow I Manage. And he thinks that Daryl is the one to finish it. And I think that's really great. I love that he has that pride in Daryl.
Daryl. I would like to give you the only copy of Somehow I Manage, unfinished. Huh. If there's anybody here who can finish it, it's you.
That's sweet, Mike. Let's see here. Here's a chapter called Gum, with one sentence. Everybody likes the guy who offers them a stick of gum.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
In transition with Daryl, he kind of goes down to the warehouse, or actually first he inquires with Daryl about getting to use the baler.
Daryl, I have one last wish. I would like to use the baler.
No, can't let you do that, Mike.
No problem.
Sorry.
Worth a try.
All righty.
And that transitions us into Michael being in the warehouse, telling one of the guys down there that, yes, he is allowed to use the baler.
Daryl said I could use the baler because I'm leaving.
No.
It's like when one of the parents says no and you go ask the other parent.
And they're like, but they said it was okay.
They said it was fine. And then we get just a fantastic sequence. And the way that it's edited is so funny. Where Michael's going to walk away, he's gonna shoot a basketball through the hoop over his shoulder as he's walking away, not looking, while he says this line, "See you on the flippity flip." But he misses like a dozen times, and it's all these like fast cuts, like in the edit, and then he finally hits it, and you can just like see Michael looks away from the camera to someone standing next to the camera, who apparently like gave him the thumbs up or like, yeah, you made it. He's like, oh, really? And, you know, it's a really funny moment. You know, I like the little nods to the crew in this episode. And there are several of them. And this one, I think, is my favorite just because how long were they down there filming this guy trying to shoot a basket over his shoulder?
They kind of indicate that a little bit with some of the warehouse workers, like just moving back and forth in the background, doing different things, like different stuff gets cleaned up and moved around while he's still trying to do this, constantly saying, catch you on the flippity flip. Oh, it is so good. I love this scene. And it's funny that they take a lot of time out of this episode to have that, but I think it's totally worth it.
I do too. And it's a season one throwback to basketball stuff.
All right, guys. Well, see you later, warehouse. Catch you on the flippity flip. All right, then. See you guys. Catch you later, warehouse. See you on the flippity flip. Catch you on the flippity flip. Catch you guys on the flippity flip. Flippity flip! Flippity flip!
Really?
Okay. See you guys.
So now next up we have Aaron, which he has some time with right outside of the warehouse where they've had kind of a heart-to-heart before on that like little bench right next to the big warehouse doors. And I like that his gift to Aaron is a moment of fatherly advice that we've seen their relationship turn into and what their relationship is basically founded on. And this is kind of where they talk about Gabe.
I know that Gabe is young and hot and everything, and he's begging me to reconsider, but I just think I'm in love with someone else.
Kevin?
Andy.
Ah.
I wish I knew who my birth mother was so she could just tell me who to choose.
Maybe neither.
He says, you know, maybe it's not Gabe or Andy. You know, you're going to know. And, you know, she has this line about, you know, I wish I knew my birth mother so I could talk to her about this stuff. And he says, you don't need that because you have my phone number and you can call me anytime. And that's, I think she's the only person who he invites along in this next step of his life is Aaron. And it's really sweet to see. It really is.
Yeah, I think that it's a really important thing because it's saying that, you know, Michael recognizes this in the importance of this relationship to Aaron. And even if she never calls him, keeping that open and saying like, hey, you can call me if you need me, like outwardly, I think that that's definitely one of those things that it's going to be important to Aaron to know that it's always there. And it's also very much conducive to the type of relationship it is. You know, like he is the father figure to her and he's not like a father figure to anyone else in the office. So like, why would he offer that to anyone else? Whereas it's like, that's something that Aaron would need.
That's so sweet.
So now we have kind of like the bigger characters, their goodbyes. And I've seen online, and also like I kind of noticed in the episode, this list that Michael has, he crosses off certain people differently than everyone else. And it seems like this is reserved for the Dwight, Jim, and Pam. And the Dwight goodbye is something that, you know, we are very much anticipating because it needs to kind of be a big deal because of how they've been on the outs. And we see the majority of the Dwight goodbye in a confessional from Dwight. And he is in the conference room revealing to the camera crew that all he got was a letter of recommendation. Or no, we see Michael hand him the letter of recommendation and say, this is what I have for you. And then basically walking away. And Dwight is opening it up in front of the camera. And this is where I first started crying because Dwight opens up the letter and he is all he has so much animosity still about the job. And he's just reading this letter. He's like, it's going to be crappy. It's not going to say anything great. And he makes fun of it at first because Michael opens with that cliche, you know, the dictionary defines type of writing. But then it goes on and it's an amazing letter of recommendation. It is so sweet. The whole dictionary definition thing takes an amazing turn. Dwight gets emotional about it, and he can't even continue reading it. He's so emotional about it.
This is going to be good. To whom it may concern. Good, real personal. Thanks, Michael. The dictionary defines superlative as of the highest kind, quality, or order, surpassing all else or others, supreme. That's great. If I wanted the dictionary definition, I'd buy a dictionary. I define it as Dwight Schrute. As a sales executive, as a leader, as a man, and as a friend, he is of the highest kind, quality, and order, supreme. Lots more like that, really repetitive.
It is such a wonderful closure to their relationship, and I think that it says everything that Dwight's been kind of longing to hear. And it also harkens back to what Michael told him in the very beginning of the episode during the cold open, was that like, it wasn't his job to give, that Michael couldn't give Dwight this job. And instead he's giving him this letter of recommendation, like the one that he probably would have written and the one that Dwight's kind of been looking for. Cause he thought that Michael wrote him a letter in the first place to get the job. And now Dwight's finally getting it. He's getting to read this letter, and it's better than he probably ever imagined it would be. And I think that that's just so damn special. Yeah, mm-hmm. This is where the tears start. That's the first tears in this episode, is the Dwight letter.
Yeah, it is just, it's beautiful. And in a way, it's so much bigger than Michael recommending Dwight for the job. It's recommending Dwight for whatever Dwight wants to do, right?
Yeah.
It's if you want to go somewhere else and do something else, whatever it is, you have my backing and my blessing. And that is obviously very special to Dwight. And it's backed up by the opportunity, something Dwight's wanted to do for a long time. It comes up in season two at that same Christmas party episode that the mittens from Phyllis pop up in. They're going to play paintball together.
This is 245 behind the building, paintball.
Oh. They mostly just shoot each other at point blank range while screaming.
I do like how Dwight is so prepared for paintball, as we can all guess, that he has it ready in his car. But there is also that moment of hesitation when he goes to play paintball. He got, like, it was a little message on the back of a business card that said 245 paintball. And he goes to the location and it doesn't look like anyone's there. And at first, Dwight's all ready. You know, he's in like ready training paintball mode. And then he kind of realizes, like, maybe no one's here. And Michael completely surprises him by jumping out of the dumpster, and they're yelling, and they're just like, it's just such a wonderful friendship moment between them. And I think the best part about it is when we see Michael kind of going back up into the office, and he has paint in his hair, like, and he's all like sweaty and messed up. He looks like totally ravaged.
What happened to you?
You should see the other guy.
It's really very, very good. And he just has this wonderful smile on his face, and the satisfaction when he looks at the camera each time he has kind of like made this connection with somebody, and mm-hmm. then he crosses off the name off the list. Like, that's what so gets me through this episode. It's every single time he like crosses someone's name off, that like, okay, I've said that goodbye. It just, mm-hmm. it hurts a little bit more.
Yeah. And we don't really hear much from Dwight after this, but we do see when Michael calls a conference room meeting in a little while, that Dwight basically runs in like he would have in those early seasons when he was very much Michael's number two, if you will.
At this point, Michael's realizing that he's kind of running out of time. We do see mm-hmm. him rushing Phyllis along for the mittens.
Yeah.
We see him starting to like triple up, as he says. He gets Creed, Gabe, and Meredith like all in his office giving some sort of like quick advice and being like, okay, thanks, bye.
Yeah. About dying alone, which is depressing.
Yeah, I was tripling up. There's not enough time in the day to have a special moment with everybody.
He's also worried about Pam not making it back in time. He has to leave at 4. And he keeps asking Jim, hey, where's Pam? Have you heard from Pam? And Jim is putting it together. And I think he finally puts it together in the conference room, where Michael calls a conference room meeting, clearly just to have one last conference room meeting. And doesn't really have a game plan. It starts to go off the rails. And Jim pulls Michael into Michael's office and says, look, you're not leaving tomorrow. You're leaving today.
Wow, so that's it, huh? Just 4 o'clock and you are gone for good.
Why am I so sad? Am I doing the wrong thing?
Absolutely not. It's just that sometimes goodbyes are a bitch.
Okay, all right. So, James Halpert. You started with this company as a fine young man.
You know what I think we should do? I think we should just save the goodbyes for tomorrow at lunch.
Oh. Okay.
And then tomorrow, I can tell you what a great boss you turned out to be. best boss I ever had.
They're both just losing it. And I have read and listened to interviews over the years that this emotion of the scene is very much those two guys having that emotion that Steve Carell's leaving the show, right? That this is not character emotion. This is real emotion. And when you watch it, it's so hard to watch because, you know, Michael starts to go into this conversation about, you know, when you started here, you were young, and like very clearly Michael is very proud of Jim and who he has become. You know, he's married, he's a father, he has all these great things in his life, and Michael's just very proud of all of that, and they just can't get through it. And it's just, this is the scene where the emotion hit me. It was this goodbye with Jim.
Yeah, for me, I wrote second tears. This is where it starts building. You know, the Dwight one is like the little sniffles and like the tear rolling down the cheek. And this one's like, oh no, here comes the crying. Like both eyes are welling up. It's like, it's so much because I'm even welling up now. Like these couple episodes are just so, the goodbye, because it, like you said, it's not just us losing this character. It's also losing this actor, and it's also losing it's going to change the dynamic of everyone in the cast. And you can tell that this cast has been together now for 7 years, and losing kind of their their leader, you know, here, it's a lot. And especially the way Jim turns this speech around and says how proud he is of Michael, that just like, that gets me. It gets me so much because, like we've been saying over and over and over, the maturity of Michael, the little trickles that we've seen him being good at his job and gradually becoming a better and better boss, the long build that we've been seeing of his relationship with Jim and like the transition of Jim into management. I mean, all the way back to like Survivor Man, when Jim was in charge for like a day and he had to deal with all the birthdays, right? Like, and Michael coming back and being like, yeah, see, it's not as easy as it looks. And having all of that like culminate here in their goodbye together, and Jim bringing that up about like what a great boss he turned out to be. And then that referencing back to the Best Boss Dundee Award that they gave him. It's just, it's so wonderfully emotional. And after this moment, Michael kind of goes out into the conference room. It's almost 4 o'clock. We kind of hear it. We heard the horn of the cab show up. Jim is sitting at his desk again at this point, and Michael's like putting on his coat to leave. And it isn't until the very, very end that we even see Jim look up, but it's like he can't even look at him. Like he can't even watch him put on his coat. Jim is just like at his desk. Like he knows Michael is about to walk out the door and leave, and he's not going to be back for the party tomorrow. And he just, he can't even look up at him. And that also gets me, like that last look that they all take of the office. And Jim, now knowing that Michael is leaving, he even told him, he's like, I called Pam. Like I tried to get in touch with her, but she wasn't picking up her phone, because as we saw earlier, Pam dipped up to the movies. And that's like so stressful to me. Like that's one of those like miscommunication plot lines that just make me kind of crazy, because it's like, she doesn't know and she needs to know. And like, I feel like the stress is really building here, because we see Michael go off in the cab, and he has this great voiceover that echoes exactly what you said maybe like 3 or 4 episodes ago, is that like Holly is his family now.
Holly's my family now. She's my family. And the babies that I make with her will be my children. The people that you work with are just, when you get down to it, your very best friends.
He's moving on, and he has to like let everyone else go in the office. Like it's time for them, like his office kids are grown up and he needs to leave and focus on Holly. And gosh, this is just, it's so wonderfully emotional. But we get a little kind of Creed closet in this moment. Mm-hmm. It breaks it up just a little bit, where Creed, holding up the Best Boss mug, says,
"See you tomorrow, boss."
We know that Creed got that out of the garbage in Michael's office. So are we to think that Creed's like, you know, picking around in his office garbage often?
Yes, all the time. Yes,
that's what I'm thinking too. It's a daily thing. It's part of his routine. And so there we see Creed with the world's best boss mug that Michael threw away at the very beginning of the episode. I thought that that was a really nice touch.
As Michael's cab pulls out, Pam pulls in just a few moments later.
I hate that. Misconnections. Oh, I know.
It's the worst. We see Michael at the airport. He's going through security. He tells the crew, he's like, hey, if this ever airs, will someone tell me? You know, let me know. He takes the microphone off. He says, it feels good to get this off my chest. And then with no mic, and I've never caught what he said before, so this time I really paid attention. With no mic, he says, that's what she said. So that's his final line to the documentary crew, is that that's what she said.
So it's so good.
It's so good. And as we see Michael walking away at the airport, Pam comes running in from out of frame without shoes on. She's gone through security to catch Michael. And we don't hear it, you know, assuming she had to give up her microphone too. But they have this really long hug and they chat for a minute and there's another hug and then that's it. And Pam is the final goodbye.
And that's what he said he wanted from Pam too. It's like he told Jim that, like, oh, I'm really upset about missing Pam, but, you know, just give her a hug for me. And I love that he gets that hug. Oh, I'm going to cry. It's in the airport. I'm crying on a podcast over a show. But yeah, this ending is just so, it's so good. It's such a great thing. And then we have Pam. talking to the camera and a talking head and revealing kind of like how, like what they said to each other and how hopeful he was.
Yeah.
And that's kind of it.
He was excited to get home to Holly.
No, he wasn't sad. He was full of hope about Colorado, and he was hoping to get an upgrade as an awards member. And he said he was just real excited to get home and see Holly.
Gosh, I can't believe I'm like crying. I like cry over this episode every time. And like, we're just talking about it.
It's intense. And it's such a great send-off for a character that defined the show for 7 seasons. And like you said it really well, a goodbye to an actor who defined this show for 7 seasons. It just, yeah, there's nothing more to say. I think this episode, even with some of the B-plot stuff that I think you and I would both like to see moved out, Michael's send-off is perfect. There's nothing about this that I think I would want to see differently.
Yeah, I can't even think of another TV series that it was able to say goodbye to a major cast member like this and then keep moving on. You know, like that's also a big part of it here is like they had this amazing episode. It's not at the end of a season. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not the end of the show.
It's not even the end of the episode. Like there's a tag back at the office.
They cannot help themselves with these tags. They just, they can't do it. They can't not tag it, which we'll get into. But like, I really can't think of any other show that closes something this major out so well mm-hmm. that can hold up. I mean, I've seen this series through 15 times. Like, it's like one of those shows that you just have on. I can't even count how many times I've watched it. And to just be talking about it with you and still be like moved to tears, that's incredible. Like that's incredible writing and acting
and
everything. Yeah. All right. We got to talk about this tag real quick. Like,
yeah,
we do get to see the next day, Michael's party and no Michael, no mm-hmm. Michael to be found. And everyone just kind of hanging out there. And we see D'Angelo. And he is confronted with some sweets as we've been building up that he had, like, you know, an eating problem. I would even call it an eating disorder. And he says that he used to be obese and lost a whole bunch of weight. But food is really still quite the challenge for him. And it's this really kind of like upsetting, weird scene, and everyone is taken aback by it. He grabs a corner of it with his fist and starts to eat it because they decide Michael's not going to show up. And I love the moment where Dwight turns to Jim and just says,
"Uh-oh."
We are very much hyper aware now of the problems that D'Angelo has, and that is, it is going to be something to overcome in the coming episodes.
I mean, he screams at a cake. That's not a normal thing to do.
No. Multiple times.
No!
Yeah, he has some inner demons that he needs to work out. Before we completely go, there is a little Creed closet. All I want to tell you, I thought of this, a Creed water closet moment.
Yes. Oh, that's so good.
Which is another nod back to a very early episode where we find out that Creed pays for the right to use the women's restroom. And while Gabe and Aaron are having a little bit of a fight in the women's restroom that Gabe followed her into, that Creed comes out of the stall in this episode, and Aaron just says, "Hey, Creed." So we know that that's still going on, and everyone's cool with it. I love that they put that in there. It's so great.
Yeah. Hey, Creed. No big deal.
He pays very dearly for that right.
Sorry.
Oh, so that was a lot. That's it. No more Michael. We don't see him for quite a while. Quite a while.
Mm.
But we still have 2 seasons left. We still have, gosh, we have how many episodes left in this season? One, two,
three.
Three, maybe 4, because there's like supposedly a 2-parter at the end. But yeah. We're, of course, as we normally do, we'll watch it as a 1-parter. But yeah, we're still a few episodes out from the end of this season. So we will be back next week talking about the episode The Inner Circle, and we will be moving on without Michael. And gosh, I can't getting through this. This was one that I was really not looking forward to talking about, but also kind of looking forward to talking about because it's such a phenomenal episode.
It is.
All around.
It is. Our hats off to this episode and to Michael Scott. Have fun in Colorado.
Mic's off to Michael Scott.
They say on your deathbed, you never wish you spent more time at the office. But I will. Gotta be a lot better than a deathbed. I actually don't understand deathbeds. I mean, who would buy that?